Hello and welcome to The Whistler, issue number 3 for March 1989. Let me introduce myself. I'm Rita and I started to work with David in customer services for Dolphin Systems last month, and I'm here just to do the introduction for The Whistler. First of all, our address and telephone number, should you want to write to us. You can do so in Braille, cassette or in print. And we are at number 97, Casiaberry, K-H-A-S-I-A-B-E-R-R-Y, Walnut Tree, Milton Keynes, MK77DS. And our phone number is 0908-608-666. And we're available on this number during the usual office hours of 9 till 5, Monday to Friday.
Well, thanks there, Rita, for doing that introduction. I've never been introduced before. It's David here. And the next thing in the boring bits at the very beginning of the tape is to say that if you would like a copy of this cassette, please send a good quality C60 in a standard postal wallet to The Whistler, number 15, Park Close, Cossington, that's C-O-S-S-I-N-G-T-O-N, Bridgewater, Somerset, TA78LG. And Peter Mead, who actually does the copying, ask that if you want to send him a message, then do so on the cassette and pop a rubber band around the cassette so that he knows that there's a message. Otherwise, he'll copy another copy of The Whistler all over your message. Right, I'm going to pass the microphone back again to Rita.
Well, there's just one more boring thing for me to say, and that is to mention at this point, of course, that Dolphin Systems for the Disabled Limited can only accept responsibility for their own products and not others, and that the views expressed in this magazine are not necessarily the views of Dolphin Systems for the Disabled Limited. Now, I think we'll take the A train.
Prompt.
Immediately.
Well, folks, I think I'm going up in the world. Not only have I been introduced by somebody in this next article, I'm actually called Mr. The article comes from... Oh, they can introduce themselves.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Pete Mead and...
Sue Patrick.
And we've been asked by a certain Mr. Calderwood to record a little item about a new computer that's been brought out by Amstrad that Sue has bought and is using with a voice synthesizer. So, just a minute. As most listeners to The Whistler will know, Mr. Sugar of Amstrad is extremely good at spotting a hole in the market and filling it, and thereby making lots of people happy and making lots of money on the side. Now, one of the holes that has been in the computer market until now as being between the pure home computers, which tend to have quite a bit of software but is generally limited to one make or one type of computer, and the business world, in which there are many manufacturers manufacturing compatible computers, usually compatible with IBM, and therefore there is lots of very good software available for lots of different makes of machine. Now, the hole between those two has just been plugged by Amstrad under the Sinclair name. They actually bought the rights to use the Sinclair name last year. And they brought out a machine called the PC200. Now, this is an IBM compatible computer with 512K of RAM. It's got a single disk drive, but it's one of the 3.5-inch type and can therefore store 720K of information on one floppy disk. And for anyone who hasn't got a feel for what that means, The older Amstrad 1640 type of machine, and the 5.5-inch, the 5.25-inch discs on those can store 360K of information. So that means that the 1 3-inch disk drive with a floppy in it can store the equivalent of 2 of the larger 5.25-inch disk drives. The machine has a full-size AT type keyboard, and perhaps Sue would like to say something about the keyboard, being a typist.
Oh, wow. Well, yes, it's a nice keyboard. It's nicely set out. It's got a raised bit on the F and J, so that the home keys are easy to find. The function keys are above the QWERTY keyboard, slightly, and are in rows of 4, because there are 12 of them. Then to the right of it you have a bank of cursor keys, and then to the right of that there's a bank of...
That's a numeric pad.
Then. All right.
That's right. And it seems a very solid keyboard. It's well built, I think.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, and the numeric pad also has a raised lump on the 5, for people who are typing and entering numbers by touch. One unusual feature of the machine is that it doesn't have to have a display. Now, anyone who's got the older type of machine will know that the Amstrad machines, knows that you have to have the monitor supplied, because all of the power supply circuitry is actually in the monitor case. But in the case of the PC200, they've put the power supply in the keyboard part of the system, and it's actually equipped with a modulator. This is a device that turns a video signal into a radio signal, or television signal if you like, so you can plug it into your own television at home if you need it to have a visual display. Of course, for a visually handicapped person, this represents quite a saving, because if you can't see the screen, you don't really want to have to buy one just to be able to run the computer. So in fact, Sue uses hers without any sort of monitor, and when I come along... That's not me. We've got a guide dog in the room, folks, and it's getting near her tea time. So when I come along to Sue to help her with her computing, I just have to grab a black and white portable television set, plug it into the modulator output, and I can see what's going on while Sue is using the speech synthesizer to operate the machine. The display in the system and the built-in circuitry is what they call CGA, which is, as most of you will know, color graphics adapter, but it is capable of supporting 40 columns, 80 columns, a monochrome mode, all of the CGA modes, and it's very versatile. And the way one switches between these different modes is a little set of switches inside the computer, very easy to get at through an opening door on the top. You set those to whatever mode you want, turn the machine on, and up it comes. We tended to use it in 80 column mode, because that makes things like HALED and HAL easier to use. For anyone who doesn't know, Sue's actually a professional typist. And you are?
All right.
And I think we're going to have to get her onto WordPerfect, because Somerset County Council have standardised on WordPerfect products, and Sue works for the social services. So I think that's what will be happening, won't it?
Well, hopefully. We should all have word processors eventually. The Somerset County Council are taking their time, but never mind. That's another story. Mm. but yes, it will be word perfect, and so obviously I want to get to know it before they say, well, hard luck, Sue, you can't have one because you can't see.
Mm. And then Sue can tell them how to operate it.
Yeah.
Be interesting, won't it? Perhaps you'd like to say a little bit about the database program you've been using.
I've been using MemoryMate,
which was discussed on the last tape.
Yes, when I heard it, I thought, help. I don't understand. but it is a simple one to use.
What sort of information have you been putting on it?
Names and addresses of listeners of a magazine, another magazine that I'm involved in. A kind of diary, because I give talks about the other magazine, and all sorts of different things go on to do with that and other things, obviously. Mm-hmm. I've got records of all the material that we have on tape for the magazine, I've started to compile a list of all the tunes that I've been taught for my keyboard.
Yeah, musical keyboard, that is, yep. Folks. We were saying, a little database that he could actually do that and get it to play the first few notes of a given tune might be an interesting exercise.
Mm.
So if you've forgotten how Auld Lang Syne goes, you just call it up and it will play the first few bars through this computer speaker. An idea.
That'd be good. Mm.
Well, I suppose the last thing we ought to say, Sue, is the price of this machine, because we've kept this secret all the way through.
Yeah. It was £299 plus VAT, which brought it up to £343.
Yes, that's right. Now, for that, you get everything we've talked about. You obviously don't get a monitor for that, but they do two other packages, one for £399 plus VAT for a monochrome monitor, and £499 plus VAT for a colour monitor in the system. So I think at £299, it's a remarkable buy and a real price breakthrough. With the offer on at the moment that Dolphin are doing on second-hand Mimic synthesizers, this means you can set up a talking computer system for around about £500. Which I think is about half the price it's been possible to do in the past.
And Pete said something about it being portable. Well, I don't know that it's meant to be. But one of the things that it needed to be for me was fairly light and easy to carry, because I have to keep it on a shelf and lift it down every time I want to use it. Because I've got nowhere else to put it, basically. And it is very light. I mean, I'm only Diddy. So if I can carry it, anyone can.
Yeah. Well, perhaps we've stirred up a bit of interest. We tried not to make this too technical, this first little item.
Well, I can't. I'm well, not technically minded.
No. Oh, well. She'll learn, folks. She'll learn.
Maybe.
But if anyone else out there is buying or has bought a PC200, let's get the information together and start a PC200 Dolphin users group. How about that?
Well.
Yes. Oh, one last thing. The only place you can buy this machine at present is from Comet. Amstrad seem to have struck one of their deals so that Comet are the exclusive dealers at the moment. I suspect that will change in the future. We had a very interesting afternoon just before Sue bought this machine, in that we took a guide dog and a speech synthesizer along to Comet and asked to play around with the machine. Okay. Just to finish off the tape, David, a couple of items not produced with the AMT system, I hasten to add, but on my Atari ST, I've got a completely software-based speech synthesizer, which I'll play in a moment. But first, how about this? This is completely digitally stored track from Mike Oldfield's record, Moonlight Shadow, and this track's called Foreign Affair. But this is, as I say, been completely produced from the RAM of my computer. So see what you think of this. Oh, the joys of a megabyte of RAM. Bit of a brute force method, though, of producing speech, isn't it? Okay, next little item is a speech synthesizer that was supplied with the basic language I use on my ST, believe it or not. And, I mean, it's not quite up to Mimic or Apollo standards, but considering there's no hardware except the computer itself, see what you think of this.
Hello, this is how an Atari ST can be made to speak. It's not quite Dolphin standard, but it's very clever. How about that, David?
No comment. No, I shouldn't say that. Pete, that was very clever indeed. That reminded me, actually, of the superior software package for the good old Beeb. And thank you to both you and Sue for doing that article for us. Most interesting. Perhaps this is the time to hear the actual HAL from the film 2001. It was on the television last month, and we videoed it. And this is the bit where HAL actually sings. For those of you who have the HAL software, you can see the dedication at the beginning of the manual, and this is where the dedication came from.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I am a HAL 9000 computer. I became operational at the HAL plant in Urbana, Illinois, on the 12th of January, 1992. My instructor was Mr. Langley, and he taught me to sing a song. If you'd like to hear it, I can sing it for you.
Yes, I'd like to hear it, Hal. Sing it for me.
It's called Daisy. 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 Give me your answer, do.
Yes, I love that film. But now for something completely different.
Hello, this is Henry Brooks from Kidderminster. I'd like to spend a few minutes of your time talking about a brand new terminal package that's come to my attention called EasyLink, spelled E-Z-I-L-I-N-K. I'm just going to give you a brief summary of what this package will do, and hopefully, by various means and other, you can then taste and see. EasyLink is a terminal package for the IBM family of computers, which incorporates a number of interesting facilities that are of extreme benefit to us as blind computer users. The most important being the fact that it'll run in view data, which means that this program will work in the Prestel emulation. With this program, you can call up, log into, and use Prestel without any further modification of your speech system or your computer. The program also supports various external protocols for error-free downloading, and also will allow you to send messages onto the Prestel network from an editor. This is extremely important, as it is difficult for a blind user to type into Prestel because of the way it scrolls characters line by line every time you type in a new character. As you use Prestel, you will understand the difficulty. So by using an external editor, however, you can go in, type your message in the editor, be it WordStar or a HAL editor, whichever you prefer, and enter a message directly with the EasyLink program straight into Prestel and have it formatted properly for the system. The only feature that this program does not support are downloads of software from Prestel, but most of us will probably not be bothering with Prestel downloads, as they're inefficient and somewhat dubious. The program is available from a company called Sansoft. This is a shareware product, so I will be glad to send copies to any blind user who would like to contact me by sending a disc wallet or a plastic mailing wallet with a card on it configured so that you can just turn the card around and the wallet will come back to you with a disc inside. And if you'd like, on the disc, place the information in a text file, like from your editor, indicating what you'd like, and I'll be glad to put it on for you and return the disc as you sent it to me in the same wallet as you sent it. I will now give you my address as well as the address of Sansoft. By the way, the 2.0 will have a number which is soon to be released from that company and which will be available to folks who buy the program outright from them at £25, will support a sort of a mini bulletin board mode, which will allow you to leave messages of your own locally in local mode on the computer console, or have friends call you up and type in messages, and also even accept software downloads using the protocols. So now, without further ado, here is my address, which is Henry Brugsch, Brugsch, 17, Kent Close, Kentclose, Kidderminster, Kidderminster, Worcestershire, WORCS, period. Postcode is Delta Yankee 10, 1, Norway, Sierra. The company which sells a program, you should write to, that's PM, Peter Mary Opacic, OPACIC, Sansoft, SANDSOFT, 5 Lytham, LYTHAM, Close, Skipton, North Yorkshire, BD232LF. And that should get any written requests to him. But again, if you would like to send a disc to me, I'll be glad to send you the program, and you can follow it from there. Enjoy it. Enjoy modeming.
Many thanks for that, Henry. Well, it's all go here this evening, and after Henry, we're going straight on to Albert.
Hello, Albert Yeo here. I'd like to tell you about a suite of programs which I've found very useful, which enables you to copy between various different disk filing systems in both directions, to and from. I have a BBC Master, and I want to be able to read and write IBM 360K MS-DOS disks. And this is what attracted me to this program. Their suite consists of 4 programs. The 2 that I have are BeebDOS, and for copying between BBC and MS-DOS, and CPM Beeb, which enables you to copy between BBC and CPM disks. But there's actually a whole list in each of the 4 programs. There's a whole list of various formats within those main formats, in as much as when I'm using BBC and IBM 360K MS-DOS, I get menus which enable me to select various MS-DOS formats, 13 of them in fact, and so I shall only tell you about one of those, just to show you how the thing works, and that will be the MS-DOS one, BBC MS-DOS. So, and then at the end I'll give you the address of the company that supplied it. So first of all, you'll boot up the disk.
And at this point, Albert does indeed boot up the disk, and basically he goes through the menu options, and the whole idea of the demonstration is to show that the program talks very satisfactorily, enabling the transfer. I'm just pre-seeing that because of limitations on space on this side of the tape. However, everything has now been set, so it's back to Albert.
That's the menu, and I'm now going to enter K for IBM 360K.
Escape to FR. Insert BBC-DFS/@indrive0. Insert in 360K. Indrive long. Press a key when you're ready.
Right, we'll press space.
Backspace.
So what we'll do is we'll press copy.
Escape to a bar. Copy.
Now it's waiting to... this is a prompt which doesn't speak. Some of the prompts have defied all my attempts to make them speak. Some of them speak anyway. This is one that doesn't, and it's asking for the whether we want to go from or to the BBC disc. Well, we'll go from it. So we've pressed F. Now it's asking for the DOS file, the BBC file name, and we've got a program on this disc called README on the BBC disc. So we'll do that. READ-ME. Press return. Now it's asking for the file name that you want to use on the DOS disk. So we'll put RE. That's it. Now it's doing it. That's copying the BBC file onto the IBM 360K MS-DOS disk. And it's done.
Well, very many thanks for that, Albert. In fact, I give more acknowledgement for that article at the beginning of Side 2. What I've done at the end of Side 1 is to leave myself 1 minute of recording time as a kind of stop press, just in case anything cropped up before we actually went to press. And I'm speaking now right at the very end of February, just to mention something about shareware and public domain programs, because Stephen Heap has had a great deal to do with accessing various sources of shareware, and he has a wealth of information. And if you want to contact him, this is his home telephone number. It's 021-783-6768. And Stephen can tell you all about his experiences that he's had with various shareware houses and computer groups. And just very finally, in the dying moments at the end of Side 1, the fact that TNAWC, the Talking Newspaper Association of the United Kingdom, does do a PC magazine called PCA. That comes out monthly. Contact them on 0435 26102. And very, very finally, the fact that Monument Tape Services do a PC magazine called Access, and they're available at number 20 Laburnum Road, Wellington, Somerset, and the postcode is TA21 8EL.
Well, David's given me all the responsibility on this tape, and it's my privilege to warn you that we're getting near to the end of Side 1 of this Whistler, issue number 3, and hope you enjoyed this side. I must admit, I still don't know how Pete Mead managed to get all that music into his computer, and I really thought it was very impressive. Thank you.
And here we are again, folks, on side two of the March issue of The Whistler. And many thanks to Albert for his article at the end of side one. Sorry I had to edit you out a bit there, Albert. In fact, I've had to edit most people out in this issue and indeed in the last issue as well. Forgive me for that. One thing that I ought to mention, though, is the address of the software that Albert was describing, and here it is now. Backsoft, that's BAKSOFT, number 20 Lees Avenue, LEYES Avenue, Cambridge, and the postcode is CB42AW. And Albert says that the programs cost approximately £17 each. He's got two of them, so it was £34 or so for those. And he explains that the company is very helpful indeed if you want to contact them. So ideal for anyone who's coming over from the Beeb to the PC for swapping over document files and also files in BASIC, which they can spool across in that way. Thanks for that, Albert. Whilst we're on the subject of prices, something that Pete Mead might have said might have taken your fancy in the first article on side one, and that was the special offer that Dolphin Systems are doing at the moment on the Mimic. What we're doing is we're selling Mimic speech synthesizers together with a HAL package at a total inclusive cost of £128. That's a good value because HAL itself costs £64. But this is to registered blind individuals only, and you're only allowed to order one. So with the Mimics that we have left, we're going to strictly ration them. But I think that that's quite good value. And as Pete said, if you do go for a PC200, then it means you have a talking PC for less than £500. Right, on to the next article. Now, where's my editor's scissors?
Thank you, David.
Hello, everybody. Well, before we get down to the real purpose of this item, maybe I will briefly introduce myself and the equipment I've got here. My name is Chris Edwards. I'm a computer programmer by occupation and have been for more years than I like to remember. But all that work has been with mainframes, so I'm a relative novice to personal computers. And in fact, I only brought my own PC in the middle of 1988. It's an Amstrad PPT 640, and I've got a Mimic synthesizer connected to it, and that's driven by HAL. I apologize for all the background roar, but I live rather closer to Heathrow than I would like, and also they're doing some building just down the road, so it's almost impossible to make a recording here without some sort of background noise. Right, well, down to the real subject of this item. In the first two issues of The Whistler, we've heard quite a lot about shareware, so I thought I would like to talk about yet another shareware product, a word processor called PC Write. Now, there's quite a lot one can say about this program, but in fact it's two programs. There's an editor and there's a page printer program, so I decided to divide my talk in half, and today I will talk about the editor. Installation is very straightforward. It's just a question of copying the program files and a couple of parameter files and a help file. It's described very clearly in the manual, and in fact the manual is pretty clear all the way through. Now, the parameter file in PC Write terminology is called a ruler file. The first line of that file is a ruler line which defines the left and right margins and the tab positions. The rest of the file is used for tailoring PC Write to your own requirements. You can redefine how text is displayed on the screen. You can redefine how the document file is written to disk so that it's compatible with other products such as PC File. And you can also redefine just about every key and key combination on the keyboard. There are one or two standard parameter changes that you can make. For example, you can put in a line with %s in the first two characters of the line, and that will make the Alt, Control and Shift keys sticky in the same way as the TAP program described by Ray Hazan in the last issue of The Whistler. The control key combinations, according to the manual, are the same as those used by WordStar, and the alt key combinations are used in the main for entering things like font control characters. For example, alt U is underline. So there are one or two conflicts with HAL, but they don't occur too frequently to be a real inconvenience. Now, the ruler file is loaded up automatically when you start up PC Write, and it looks for the file in all the directories defined in your path statement, so it does not have to be in the same directory as PC Write or in the same directory that your document is in. Well, as far as giving a demonstration is concerned, I'm sure you don't really need me to prove to you that you can insert and delete characters, words and lines. So I thought that what we'd do is go into PC Write and just have a look at one or two of the other facilities. So I will load up a document that I've already got here. The top line of the PC Write screen is always the status line, and there are prompts there as well for you when necessary. When we're loading up a file that already exists, we will get a message asking us if we want to create a backup, I hope. So I'll do an Alt-L to see.
Press S to cancel backup, copy, Ctrl-Fy to write, double quote, list, or period, D, dollar, double quote.
Well, I don't want to create a backup, so I'll press Escape, and I should now be on the first line of the document.
Color, period, D, period, Elderwood, color.
Right, this is the a bit of a fake letter to David Calderwood. So I would like to copy in my address to the beginning of the letter. So if I position the cursor at the extreme left-hand end of this line, using shift and left arrow, I can now press Control and Function 3, and I should now be prompted for a file.
File to copy in left parental, ask to cancel right parental, long double quote mark, period, dot double quote.
Right, so if I now type in my file name.
The semicolon backspace semicolon colon backslash lbptrs backslash attrvss period hbt.
And, file should now be copied in, and if I go back up the document using the cursor up key, I should find a date that is way out of date. Okay, and if I go a bit further back, I should get my postcode. Right, so my address has been copied in successfully, so I'll now go back to the beginning of David's address. And if I wanted to copy all or part of this address about within the document, I could do so, marking the text first using the function key 3 to copy text, function key 4 to delete text, function key 6 to move text, but I can also mark text and then copy it to an external file. So I'll position the cursor at the left-hand end of the line and press Control and F6 to start marking. I'll then move down to the next line, and I will move the cursor to the end of the line, and I will press F6 again, and I should now have a prompt on line 1 that's asking me to enter a file name.
File to copy to left parental, ask to cancel right parental, long double quote.
Right, so I will enter a file name.
PACIT.
Now, if this file already existed, I would get another prompt which would ask me if I wanted to overwrite the file or add the marked text to the end of the file. Now, another useful little feature is one called the bookmark. So I'll just move the cursor down to another line in the text.
This is part of the demonstration
right.
Of the PC-Write word processor period in the...
If I scroll through that line,
demonstration.
Right. We'll leave the cursor positioned at demonstration, and I can now press Control and Home to set this thing called the bookmark. I can now move about all over the document. I can do searches, finds, replaces, anything I like. In fact, I'll go to the top of the document.
Plus.
Right, that's in my address. and I could do whatever I wanted, really, any other editing. But if I press Home and End, and I now do an Alt O,
demonstration,
I'm back at exactly the same place. And that's quite useful. If I want to view the ruler line, I can press Function 2, and the line will be displayed at the same line where the cursor is currently positioned. So if I now do Alt L, right, I won't bore you with any more of that, but basically the L is the left margin, the dashes and pluses are just really part of a scale to show you whereabouts you are, and the T is for where the tab setting is. Now, you can edit this line if you wish, but it doesn't actually overwrite it on the ruler file. It's just simply a temporary edit while you're in PC Write. You can load a brand new ruler file by pressing Ctrl and F2 and typing in the name. When you've got the ruler file displayed like this, if it's in the middle of the screen, you can actually use it to create two windows. So if you want to get rid of it, you just press Function Key 2 again. Well, I think I'm running out of time, really, so I'll just give you a quick look at what happens when you come out of PC Write. You press Function Key 1, and you get a menu which has a number of sort of standard options on it. You also get the first of up to 8 screens of help text, and you can browse through these screens using the cursor up and down keys. The options to get out include things like just saving a file, or saving a file and going to DOS, renaming a file, loading a new one, etc. But there is one, which is Function Key 4, which allows you to start a new DOS shell, so we will just try that one.
To return to PC-Write, Marvelous DOS command exit Minecraft.
Right, now there's quite a lot of text there, so I won't carry on reading all that out, but basically we're in DOS now. We could start up a new program if we've got enough RAM, and we could do any DOS commands we so wish. In fact, let's have a look at that file we copied out earlier on. Right, so there you are. That was the file I created earlier on. If I want to go back into PC Write, I simply do, and if I do Alt O, I'm back exactly where I started. Well, I do realise that I've only skimmed the surface of this product, really, but I hope that it's given you a flavour of what it's like. Now, I'm not making any claims that the features in that I've talked about are unique to this particular product, or indeed are better than those in other products. I'm just a very satisfied user of this particular word processor. If you do have any questions you'd like to ask, my telephone number is 01979 8052, and next time, if David decides to use it, I will talk about the page printer and formatting text, because there are a lot of facilities available to enable you to lay your documents out nicely. Anyway, I hope to be talking to you again sometime. In the meantime, it's goodbye from Chris and
over to David.
Superb, Chris. Thank you very much indeed for that article. I didn't have to cut anything out. Indeed, we've had so many good articles from different people, it seems a shame to start to edit and all the rest of it. Maybe we should increase the cassette from a C60 to a C90 for future issues. I don't know. What do you think? We've got nearly 150 listeners now. Any feedback? Just pop a little note in with your cassette as you send it back to Pete Mead for copying, and Pete will bundle up all the bits of paper and send them off to me in an envelope, and I'll be able to do an analysis of what people think. If you're including any little notes, please could you tell me what you're using, HAL Speech or the EGA soft window or CGA soft window or whatever Dolphin product you're using. Please can you tell me what you're using it for and how well you're getting on with it. It would really be nice to build up a database of what people are using, how they're using it, what they benefit from it, any problems indeed, so that we can get things right. Something that we've been working hard on over these past few months is HAL version 2, HAL V2, as it has become known. Several people have been out evaluating it, and by the end of this month, well, I'm doing it in February, of course, doing this tape, it'll be out, released by the 1st of March. So anyone who wants an upgrade of HAL Speech to HAL Speech version 2, then please send back your original disc to Dolphin Systems, and it will, of course, be updated free. But I do warn you that HAL version 2 is very different from the version of HAL that you're using at the moment. So if your version works for you, well, stick to it. However, you might be convinced otherwise. Patrick Adams is one of the people who's been trying out HAL version 2 and reporting back different bugs and sorting different things out. And he sent this report a little while ago. It's a wee bit out of date because some of the problems that he mentions have now been put right. Patrick is a very interesting person. He also runs Riverside Training, which is the training establishment that Dolphin Systems recommend. Patrick, with his wealth of experience, we really do find him to be able to train not quite the untrainable, but Patrick will have a go even at them. He really is excellent and has lots of different skills to offer. But I asked Patrick if he could talk a little bit about HAL version 2 and what he'd done with an integrated package that he uses a great deal of, and that's SMART. That's a spreadsheet, word processor and database, and even a communications package all joined into one. And Pat sent me this report. Alas, it's on four-track format, I've had to blank off one track. And of course, with copying the blank track and his recording will be mixed together, so the actual recording quality will be somewhat degraded. However, I'm sure that what Patrick has to say will be well worth listening to. So over to you, Pat.
In the past, with HAL, it's of course been possible with your word processor or database or whatever you've been using to find out exactly what is on the screen. But this has taken a fair degree of key pushes with older versions of HAL. In other words, if you don't know what's... let's say you pressed a function key and a menu's come up. In order to read that menu, you would have in the past have had to have defined a window where that menu would pop up, and then hit the Alt-P function, followed by the number of the window you wanted to read, which in a package like SMART and, you know, complicated packages like that, is quite a lot of work, all in all. And it would be nice if HAL would actually chat back to you, and without you having to do anything at all, apart from set it all up in the beginning. And this is what I've done with the new version of HAL, which, as said, it won't be released for a little bit, but fairly shortly, it is expected. Now, I think the best way to deal with it is to just explain a little bit beforehand and then give a live demonstration. So, let's say I wanted to print a document out, and the print sequence in SMART has a number of steps along the way. Now, these can all be economized into one step if you're going to do the same type of printing, but just for the sake of argument, you wanted to go step by step. Now, it would be nice if the menu prompts actually were spoken to you as you hit your choice, and then the next choice would be spoken. And this is precisely what's happened. So I'll just set my machine up so that I can explain from beginning to end. Right, this demonstration takes us from the DOS level, in other words, when you've switched on and loaded the HAL and everything else in, right the way through to printing out a document. So the first thing is I've set up that version 2 to give me a speaking menu. So instead of having to read the screen to find out what menu option there is, I've set it up so that when I press the keys, it will tell me what choice I'm hitting. So if I hit in my menu 3W, that should give me the SMART word processor. So So here we go. If I hit 3, it says smart. Oh. So I want the word processor now. Right, now press the enter key. And as it's loading up, it takes a fair while because it is a big program. There's an awful lot to load in, and I've only got a humble old XT clone. Right, it's just getting to loading it in. Right, the information it gave me there, you may not have picked that up, but I've set a message to say when it actually gets into the smart word processor, it says edit mode, so you know you can enter text. Also, it told me the page number, which isn't really necessary at this stage because it always starts on page 1. But I have set it so that whenever you've, let's say you're typing text and you've crossed the page boundary and you're onto page 2, it will actually say page 2, and whatever page it is. And when you cursor through the document, you will then find exactly where the page break is, which I find very useful. Also, I've got the insert overwrite key talking as well, so when you press it into overwrite, it says in my case insert off, and when I go back to insert, it says insert on. There are any number of things you can do with HAL version 2 to set it up as you would like it, but in this particular case I'm going to print a file from disk, so I'm going to hit the smart what's called a quick key to get up the print sequence going, and we'll see what HAL says. Okay, it repeated that twice, and it gave me the initial smart print menu, which is normal, enhanced, preset options, so on and so forth. This is the initial. Now I'm going to slow the synthesizer down because you may not be catching this on the tape. So I'll go into reading, and then slow it down one stop. And we'll take it to speed 3 and see if you can understand. Right, if I now enter normal I just want a normal type, normal print. Again, it has a lot of work to do, it has to find the printer driver, and that seems to take it some time. It prints it repeats it twice. Now there is a little tidying up to do in HAL. I'm not sure whether the final release version of 2 will stop that, but it doesn't bother me because you can always use Altem to shut it up. Now I'll put the file name in, which is a file called Bugs, which is my report of the slight blemishes I found in V2. I'll press the enter key now. Oh, that's interesting, because it's now going to increase the speed again, but I'm sure you'll be able to catch it. And it's offering me the next option, which is either to print to disk or to print to the printer. So this time I'll choose the disk this time. So I'll give it the file name BUGS REP. Right, it's now done that, and it's actually told me a couple of times it has actually done it. Just for this quick demonstration, you can tell now that you can configure HAL version 2 for whatever program you're using, not just Smart, so that WordStar, whichever version you're using, can be configured to run with HAL version 2. HAL Editor can have one or two extra features put onto it as well. WordPerfect, I have done some parameter files for WordPerfect, I've also done some, I'm doing some files of WordStar 3.4 at the moment. I'm expecting soon to get Turbo Lightning and will also work on those. The point is that some people actually prefer not to have to do their own setting. I think it's true to say that version 2 is now much more complicated than the previous versions, and there's an awful lot more to do in it. Now, some people may prefer just to have an off-the-shelf set of parameters for Smart or WordPerfect or whatever they're using. Now, these will become available. Some people have been, other than myself, have been using HAL version 2 and reporting back on the bugs and also setting parameter files up for their applications. So I think in the first instance it would be David Calderwood would be the person to refer to as to find out if there are any parameters. Now, and I think also those that are setting version 2 parameters, could they please contact David Calderwood, whatever they've done, because it can be of use to other people. And I would, what we're trying to do through David is to set up, really set up a library of parameters, so that if new users come along and they have HAL V2 and they've also got WordPerfect 5 or Smart or whatever, they can contact David Calderwood and say, okay, well, I'll send you a disk down with the parameters that you need. So it then makes it much more, each application is then configured to talk in a much more chatty way than it has up to now.
Well, many thanks to you, Patrick, for that report. I'm sure that everyone was able to hear it quite satisfactorily. Patrick's done a very great deal with HAL version 2, including writing a parameter file which makes his word processor say ding ding when he reaches 5 characters from the end of each line, rather like an old-fashioned typewriter. We've gone round full circle. Well done, Patrick. Good idea about the having a library of parameter files. I've done a little bit myself with HAL V2. Working with Tom Vincent from the Open University, we've been playing around with CD-ROMs. One compact disc, one single compact disc, holds over 600 megabytes of data. And the price is now coming down to just hundreds of pounds. And we've been using one with an Amstrad 1512 very successfully using speech. So watch this space. You heard it first in the Whistler. Patrick, mentioning about libraries, Richard Bartholomew, as you know, is keeping our disk library, and that's probably where all the parameter files will end up. Richard is dealing with PC stuff. We have a new name, and that's Gordon Smith. Gordon is dealing with BBC stuff, mainly with copying and distributing the little Apollo Taylor for the BBC, for BBC users who want to use the Apollo. By the way, there is a similar Taylor for the PC for people who don't use HAL as a screen reader, so they can set Apollo up. That's either as a command line program, or they can incorporate it in the batch file. Anyway, if you want to give me a buzz for telephone numbers and addresses for all these different people, please do so. My number appeared at the beginning of the tape. And just a final reminder to say that if you do send to any of these good people to ask them for bits and pieces, please make it easy for them to return the goods. Everything from Pete Mead, who does the copying for us, we're so grateful to you, Pete, off the Whistler, please send your stuff in a nice pouch to him. Good quality C60. And if you're sending off for discs, please include return postage, etc. That's great. Well, we're very rapidly coming to the end of the Whistler. I'd be very grateful for your comments on issue 3. Please continue to send in the articles. And as the Whistler now goes all over the world to overseas listeners, we'd be most grateful for articles from you, and I shall be very careful not to use my editing scissors if you do send stuff, especially if we go over to C90 format. So without further ado, it's many thanks to everyone who helped me put Whistler number 3 together. Look forward to talking to you again with Whistler number 4, which comes out on June the 1st. So from me, David Calderwood, bye-bye to you all, and thanks for listening. Bye-bye.